never disturbed. You see, he would have to go beyond that. That I thought I should mention. Let Kanti regard it as more naive than he was. The conclusion of this section, toward the end of the section, Kant states then clearly there exists no possibility of deducing morality from the intellectual or the luminary world of the thing himself. Now that is clear. Why? Morality, what Kant had said before in this long discussion, which he can agree here, is that is, but I must say that the complication would very much. There is this complication which we have not yet discussed and which I can barely more than mention. We have the world of experience, which of course should not be presented in this way because it has its own infinity. Therefore, the world, but it is limited, has its limit, world of experience. Now, this world creates another great difficulty for morality, a decisive difficulty, because in the world of experience, there is nothing but strict determination. Freedom is impossible. Therefore, freedom is impossible here, and the only way of proving that freedom is possible is to show that this whole phenomenal world is only phenomenal, and that there is a world radically different from the phenomenal world. However, we must be think of ourselves as members of the noumenal world in order to understand ourselves as moral beings. But we do not know, we must assume, we must presuppose this noumenal world. We do not know it. Therefore, a deduction of the categorical imperative is impossible. Difference, correcting a statement which I made earlier. It is indeed true to begin with that the moral law must not be deduced from the essence of man, but from the essence of a rational being. But what Kant says towards the end, in different words, we have no knowledge of ourselves as rational beings except to the extent to which this rationality shows itself in the act of reason, like found in science and the science of the moral law. Therefore, the moral law cannot be from anything. There is, I mean, the great ambiguity which goes through this section can perhaps be stated as follows. One can easily present it in the form of a simple contradiction, but one must then try to understand how a man like Kant can commit such a contradiction. It is necessary to deduce morality. That is said very clearly throughout the book. But it Kant also says it is impossible to deduce morality. What is behind this book? It is impossible to deduce a moral law fundamentally, because the moral law is the only unconditioned, the only absolute of which we know. In all other cases, for example, all other principles of reason do not have this unconditioned character. The moral law is the principle, the principle of all understanding, you can say, although that goes much beyond time. The principle. But obviously that cannot be maintained. The moral law is conditioned. It cannot be the principle. The first ground of any human orientation, the moral law, cannot be the first cause. Therefore, the difference. I think that this difficulty is not limited to Kant, that you would find similar things in other modern philosophies. I will illustrate this a bit by the following remark. Morality, Kant says, presupposes freedom. But how is freedom possible? In a world which is ruled by the iron law of cause and effect. It is not possible in that world. So we must make a distinction between the phenomenon and the noumenal world. But still, what do we imply in making that distinction? We try to answer the question, how must be the whole so that there can be morality? What are the conditions, the cosmic conditions of self-legislation? These cosmic conditions may not be fulfilled in the phenomenal world, but still, there are conditions for it. The unconditioned categorical imperative does have conditions. Morality cannot be simply the principle. Or to reintroduce a term used by Kant, we cannot escape some form of tutelage. You know, you remember that that was the Latin term. In Suarez's book on the law, Suarez was the codifier, we could say, of Thomistic philosophy in the early 17th century. In Suarez's book on laws, book 1, chapter 3, which begins, he says, absolute necessity, according to which something is said to be by itself and because of itself necessary, cannot belong to law as law, because such a necessity is proper only to God. And the law is either something created, or else it presupposes some creature for the sake of which it is given. Since rational creatures, men, are not absolutely necessary, there could not be man. The law cannot be absolutely necessary. The law is necessary if we suppose the creation of the rational creature. And then it is necessary so that such a being can live in accordance with its nature. What Kant is trying to do is to assert the necessity of the moral law as an absolute necessity, so that the moral law is in fact taking the place of God in traditional theology. And that is important. There are many other difficulties coming up here in connection with this, last section. I to mention only two grave problems. The one was already mentioned on earlier occasion. How is a bad will, an immoral will, possible from Kant's point of view? If the will is identical with practical reason. have any practice, it follows that there cannot be a bad will. The bad will must be, can be understood distinctly if one assumes that there is a libertas indifferentiae, a freedom of indifference, that man is free to choose the good and the evil. And if this is the essence of the will, to be free in this way, but this is subjective, freedom means for Kant, in the positive sense of the word, autonomy, self-legislation, subjecting oneself by deed to that law.
Yes. I really wonder, is that necessarily a problem for Kant? When you don't will, when you don't act in accordance with practical reason, then you simply fall under this way of passions. So that evil is not a bad will at all, but it's
yeah, sure. All right, and it's me, you really decide. Yeah, but the question is from any moral point of view, it's necessary to admit in one way or the other a bad will, that the true choice of a life of desire in this narrow sense, and distinguish from the life of the will is the bad will. But Kant has no clear possibility of giving a commentary. That is a very complicated thing in Kant. The only thematic discussion of the bad will you find in his book on religion, Religion Within the Limits of Pure Reason, where he makes considerable use of traditional Christian notions, but which do not jive, however, with his other philosophy. I have a whole mistake to do this. This is one of the things. But the other point, the other difficulty is also rather obvious. Assuming this dualism of the noumenal and sensible world, our actions take place in the sensible world, obviously. That as far as our life is concerned, there's only six words, and one word. How you must therefore, if you are confronted with any human action, you can and must understand it in two contradictory ways. As a free, responsible action of the man who does it, good or bad. Responsible action, and it is a perfectly determined action. Yeah. Determined by the sign of God. That also leads to terrible. Do you want to say something?
Yeah, that's fine. With regard to the necessity of the will being good, it seems to me that Kant implies is always good in a sense, it is always giving universal law, but that it is weak or fragile. He seems to have the fragility of the world, which comes to the fragility comes into operation where the will comes into collision with these sensual phenomena. And this is where the choice takes place. It would then be necessary for there to be a possibility of a schism in the good will itself, where it can continue to will to give the law because this is its nature, but yet would fall down somehow in bringing this will into effect in connection with the God.
Yeah, but the question is simply whether from such a strict moral point of view as Kant is anxious to assert, you can reduce the badness of the will to mere fragility. That is the difference. It is true, can deny in one sense the bad will proper. He denies that it is possible for man to rebel against the moral law as moral law. That is true. That is also diabolical and thinks it's impossible in man. But the question is whether the bad will is not more than merely tragic. Say someone who is forbidden to drink alcohol, that is I know this from a German presentation which says you will know Push from Helene. Yeah. A woman who is forbidden to drink and she prays to God that he give her strength. While she is on her knees, she moves towards the bottle. That is a simple example of a nearly fragile will. But whether you can understand the actions of a really evil people, for example of Hitler, in terms of a merely fragile will, can be doubted.
Wouldn't it be possible to say from Kant's point of view that the surrender of the will to the phenomenal world would be a truly horrible thing?
Yeah, that is the evil will. But that would presuppose a liberty of indifference, that man is free to turn to the world of morality, or to be and remain submerged in the world of desire and mere act concerned with happiness without any moral regard. But Kant denies that. Kant denies that, and that is a very difficult question. It must have something to do with what we discussed at the beginning of this course, this uniformity. You know, there is a uniformity in the world of morality, the moral uniformity of the good theories. There is a uniformity of passion, let me say, or desire, in the phenomenon. But if there is a liberty of indifference, that means, of course, extension, non-uniform. Because no one short can be addicted in any way. So that is really, in a way, the sphere of power and extension. A sphere of chaos as far as the circles. You know? And I think the mere usage of Kant, the identification of will and practical reason, which is so necessary for him to make, shows that there cannot be a bad will problem. And there is sufficient evidence in his writings, especially in his last writing about religion, late writing about religion, that it is so. Yes?
Could we say that one is not free to give up an essential freedom of the will? That is, that in some sense, he must continue to will the universal law, but that he is free to reject what he wills and slide into the idea of the phenomenal world.
Yeah, that's a bad will. Sure. Yeah, but how do you account for this leeway? For the fact that man has his latitude?
Well,
this
is the realm of freedom which we can't understand.
Yeah, but which would, I think, mean a liberty of indifference. That the will as such is neither good nor bad, but becomes good or bad by his choice. That is traditionally called the liberty of indifference, and Kant rejects that.
Well, Kant says that the realm of freedom must be bound by law, and that they, otherwise freedom would be
they honor the laws of freedom. But there is a mystery of freedom can't admit. The laws of freedom are the moral laws. Yeah. So I only your expression is not quite correct. Yeah, but I can only say this difficulty is really not... while it is obviously present in Kant, it is never solved by. And that would lead a much broader analysis than we can do now, can give now.
Could you just once more state that I never quite understood why the practical reason is identical to the theory?
Yeah.
Why it has to be so?
Because there cannot be any object of the moral will. Yeah, that's very easy to understand. I will try to explain that.
It confuses me because practically it has to send you
understand. Oh, no. Practical reason means that as you see it, then it's moral. That comes from the meaning of the Greek word praxis. Where praxis is is distinguished from poiesis, from any production, and any technical. That anything you do, for example, if you open a tin box or drive a car, that is not an action problem. Right? An action problem is morally a good event. If you do anything which is meant for an effect as a fact and does not possess the value of being itself is not the action that is not the action.
Now that is the thing
in the traditional notion you must a good action conflict moral action means to choose the right thing in the right field. And if you choose the right thing for its own sake, for the result, then you choose it in the right way, that is the proper quality of your will, good will. But it must also be the right thing. Because if you do the wrong thing in the right field, because if you steal in order to help the poor, you are immoral. So it is not the goodness, the intention of the goodness, it's not the goodness of the goodness, it's not sufficient to make the action good. You must also have the right object. And then that would be the function of practical reason. Establish the right thing and of the will to choose it for something. But Kant says it is impossible to determine the right thing by practical reason in the old sense, because this would mean that there are certain things who oppose aim, which are intrinsically good. Any aim, even the aim of helping other people, that's something we all know about the good aim, cannot be, cannot be in itself good. What Kant means by the formal character of phenomena means that no end can be known to be good.
good. Brian. She's a woman known him. The woman he needs only the power of the will and not the what is morally important. The an uncontent that the mere how of the will is sufficient for establishing all possible legitimate wants. And I think that we discussed this last time, you know, the songs that come out to show, for example, the formation of net fraudulent premises, not on any ground of any, for example, that human society is not possible if there are no, if promises are not a declared institution of society. That would be a consideration of him. He would have a reasoning, a factual reasoning, looking at society as an end, and you see promises are indispensable to people out of this together. And if that is so, the promises must not be broken and made, because that would be destructive of the very institution of promises. But Kant deduces, you remember, by the mere fact that you cannot successfully universalize the maxim, I want to make fraudulent promises. This mere fact that it can, that is, maxims of this kind cannot be successfully universalized is sufficient, is necessary and sufficient for determining the moral or immoral character of the maxim. And therefore, Kant does not need and cannot use a practical gift from his will. No apprehension of good precedes and can precede the moral as a good will. And therefore, the moral, the impeccability of practical reason and structural reason migrate into the will and make it a good one. But we must not come to a conclusion. The conclusion must certainly be that we have not exhausted in any way the depth of Kant, but we have to come back to bear of certain important considerations which one must keep in mind if one wants to understand Kant. And I believe that the beginning of the analysis which I suggested, namely to start from the modern natural right, especially in its Rousseauan version, as a starting point of Kant's whole understanding of morality, is the most helpful I know. Is there any point which you would like to bring up, which is so burning that it cannot be postponed? And so then, Mr. Masters, you come to my office sometime. Good.
Yes, Russia.
Yeah.
And 8 weeks quarter.